Where'd you find this?
Oh shit, Craig's here.
We're here. It's episode 123, TH Fantasy. Craig's here, Ryan's here, Shane's here, Tony's here.
Not only is it ladies' night, but it's International Women's Day, so double up.
That's true. And I love how at work, like, the boss made a great point to point out that it was International Women's Day, but failed to recognize that it was National Employee Appreciation Week last Friday. Didn't even say anything.
What'd they say about Black History Month? Did they just, like, skip over that, too?
I told my coworkers, I was like, next International Women's Day, I'm taking the day off of work. Like, this is your day to shine, ladies. like, I don't want to, you know, like, compete with you at work. I want you to have this. This is for you.
Show how powerful you are by doing my job for me.
I'm going to stay home and watch college tape all day.
Hey guys, we had some interesting stuff happen within the last few days. I mean, obviously we had the combine last weekend, but according to the Titans, Derrick Henry will not be a Titan after this year. So where do you guys think he ends up?
I will say right off the rip, the running back market is so fucked right now. Like, I feel bad for every person trying to get paid, but I'm going back to the well for me for Derrick Henry, pondering my orb, because I was a year early. Dallas,
okay.
Baltimore.
God. Yeah, I think you said Baltimore last week, Tony, and that makes a lot of sense. That's what Baltimore does, just get like four decent running backs to come behind Lamar. I mean, he might be a serious threat in that offense.
See, but the way the Ravens work out is he will get hurt, and I don't wish that for him.
Yeah, that's true.
I could also see him going to like the Raiders.
Yeah, that's true.
Pittsburgh, dude, they're making a push. They're gonna get Russ. They're gonna get Derrick Henry.
Oh my god.
Another thing this week too, like, it says a lot for because I thought maybe Jadeveon Sanders would go to Miami, but they picked up Jonnu Smith this week.
Red zone. They needed help in the red zone.
Same player.
Yeah. Well, if you recall, you remember from earlier this last season, if Tua goes down, Jonnu can throw a pass.
That's true. Not well.
True. It's terrible. He's really bad at it.
Also, Xavier Worthy setting the all-time 40-yard dash record. Anything to say about that? Because I'll tell you something. That's kind of mid. You know why? You know why it's kind of mid? Because let's look at the 40-yard dash times of all time, the records, and there's just one person really that came out of those 9 or 10 people that was the best. Obviously, Chris Johnson at 4.24 yards or 4.24 seconds in the 40-yard dash. But otherwise, we got at 4.22 John Ross didn't really amount to anything in Cincinnati. Dree Archer, yeah, 4.26. Nothing really to say about that guy. Jerome Mathis, wide receiver, 4.26.
Who?
Don't really know who that is.
You're making people up.
Yeah. Marquise Goodwin, 4.27. Okay. All right. Third round, 2013 draft.
I am holding out hope, because I think Xavier Worthy is awesome, but we got to get to him.
He was like the one Texas guy we didn't cover today or this week.
He's too small. Stanford Rote, 4.27 as a cornerback for Houston.
Yeah, you're not going to stop until this is totally beaten down. Like, hang on, everybody that sucks.
Tyrone Calico, 4.27, middle wide receiver. He was drafted in the second round of 2003 to Tennessee. Jalen Myrick, a cornerback from Minnesota. J.J. Nelson, 4.28, drafted in the third round of 2015 by the Cardinals.
I love J.J. Nelson.
Jacoby Ford, 4.28. Drafted by the 2010 Oakland Raiders out of Clemson, and at 4.29, Fabian Washington, a cornerback for Oakland. So not a lot of talent there, even though your dash is good, outside of Chris Johnson, obviously being the beast that he was. Just want to temper your expectations with Xavier Worthy here.
I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you there, but you know what?
Go ahead. Yeah, sure. 5'8", 160 pound, 65 pound wide receiver is going to translate well to the NFL. Sure.
Hey, we saw Tank Dell. We will make the addendum because I checked them off my box last year. So I still got to watch them.
You ever seen this little movie? It's called Little Giants.
Dude, my favorite.
All right. You're going to run the annexation of Puerto Rico?
Yeah, dude, I believe.
I will say, though, who's the quarterback at Texas?
Ed O'Neill. Oh, Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, that dude sucks. Like, he did nobody favors on that team for their draft capital.
Yep, he's terrible.
Donnie Mitchell did really well.
We'll talk about him.
Yeah, we'll get there. All right, Ryan, start us off, baby. The podcast industrial complex yearns for your input.
All right, guys. I chose to profile a tight end this week.
Shocker.
Right? A tight end who is in the College Football Hall of Fame and the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and weirdly enough, was in the Pro Football Hall of Fame ahead of his induction into the College Football Hall of Fame. I want to talk about Mr. Dave Kasper. All right.
Oh, yeah.
He's born in Bemidji, Minnesota, as we all know, if you've ever watched the Fargo movies, is one of the places they go. Oh, yeah. They got good pancakes.
Bemidji sounds kind of like a slur.
It does.
I'm just going to say.
Fucking Bemidji. So, let's see. He played college football at the University of Notre Dame, which I thought was cool, after his talents were found in the Midwest. Let's see. He was actually a tackle beginning for the University of Notre Dame. This guy was a little bit bigger. He was 6'4", 240 pounds, give or take a few pounds during his career. He was an All-American when Notre Dame won the national championship in 1973. He was also the offensive MVP as a tight end and recorded 21 receptions for 335 yards and 4 touchdowns. That's like a huge record for a Big Ten team. That's like one pass a game, you know? No, maybe 2. Sorry. We're talking college, a little less games, but that's almost 2 catches a game for a Big Ten tight end. That's like unheard of. All jokes aside, let's see. Kasper was selected in the second round of the 74 NFL draft by the Raiders and was not very good his first 2 years. He only caught 9 passes in his first 2 seasons, but he was a top 10 receiver in the Raiders' 1976 championship season. He had 53 catches for 691 yards and 10 touchdowns.
Damn.
Coming out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Right? Dave Kasper is known as the Ghost. That is his nickname. And we'll talk about the Ghost to the Post.
Where did it, baby?
Yeah, it was the 1977 Divisional Playoff game against the Baltimore Colts. Kasper made an over-the-head catch of a soft pass lofted by Ken Stabler in the famous Ghost to the Post. The 42-yard reception set up the game-tying field goal and forced overtime, and the Raiders went on to win 37-31. With Kasper's 10-yard touchdown reception in the second overtime period, he finished the game with 4 receptions for 70 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Solid.
But he also was involved in another famous NFL contest in 1978 in September between the Raiders and Shane's San Diego Chargers.
Holy roller.
Yeah. The Raiders trailed the Chargers 20-14 with just 10 seconds left in the game when Oakland quarterback, about to be sacked, dropped the football. He flicked it toward the goal line in an effort to save the game, and Raiders running back Pete Banaszak recovered the ball at the San Diego 12-yard line, but dropped the ball again, and it rolled further forward. Kasper kicked the ball at the San Diego 5-yard line and finally recovered it in the end zone to tie the game. All right. Now, the extra point was good, and Oakland won the game by a point, 21-20. But the Chargers protested on the grounds that Stabler's fumble was actually a forward pass and therefore should have been ruled incomplete when it hit the ground. And as a result of this being early on in the NFL in the 70s, the NFL changed its rules to make it illegal for the teammate of a ball carrier to advance the ball if the ball carrier fumbles on fourth down or in the last 2 minutes of the game.
That's fascism. Like, rule of cool. Rule of cool, man. Like,
it's like it's like changing the overtime rule.
Listen, I'm going to go with the concept of you're not cheating, you ain't trying. But also, when it's against my team, it's bullshit. So
that's true. That's true. Imprison this man.
So he finished his pro career with 378 receptions for over 5,000 yards and 52 touchdowns. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2002, the College Football Hall of Fame in 2012. He caught his first touchdown of Super Bowl 11, which was a 32-14 Raiders victory over Minnesota Vikings, along with three touchdowns in the Ghost of the Post game. Casper caught two more touchdowns in the 1977 AFC Championship game, and his five touchdowns in a postseason is an NFL record for tight ends that still stands today. I looked that up just to make sure, and it is true. But a wide receiver holds the record. Damn it, who was it with eight? It wasn't Jerry Rice. Damn it, I can't remember who it was. I should have wrote that down. But anyways, that's Mr. Dave Casper from Minnesota.
Ghost to the Post. And the Holy Roller, dude. Like,
yeah.
Before weed was legal in Illinois, whenever someone had weed with like a name, a strain name, you'd be like, fuck yeah. I'm going to get some of that purple Whipple moonfuck. And
purple
like...
Whipple moonfuck. That's I want that right now. That sounds like a 40% concentrated indica that I want right now.
But like when you found like plays that had a name, it's the same type of feeling. You're like, man, this is fucking cool.
Right.
See, but I think in this modern day era where everything's like overexposed, I think the weed strain part is mad corny, where the football thing still holds up.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. So I want to hop in and do mine before we get too far away from combine chatter, because I want to talk combine guys today. I am going to talk, let me talk a little bit about the combine to start. So last weekend, we saw prospects descend on Indianapolis to get put in shorts and weighed, measured, and made to run for the enjoyment of billionaires. The Combine started in 1982, and it was originally called the National Invitational Camp. It was designed for the same reason back then that it is today, and it has had its fair share of criticism, especially from like former players who are like, this is a fucking meat market, I was treated like shit, blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is the Combine remains a key part of both the NFL offseason and the start of the journey for many, if not all, draft-eligible players. The history of the Combine itself isn't super important, but today I wanted to use my time to talk about a dude that gamed the Combine himself and is considered one of the biggest draft busts of all time, a dude by the name of Tony Mandarich. Tony Mandarich was born in Oakville, Ontario, Canada, which is a town between Toronto and Hamilton, which is where my wife is from.
Yeah.
Mandarich's older brother got a scholarship to play football at Kent State in Ohio. So Tony wanted to go to college, and he's like, yo, let me play senior year football so that I can hopefully get a football scholarship. So he's already a big dude. Apparently it worked, because even though he'd only played 1 year, future Hall of Fame college coach Nick Saban would recruit him to play for Michigan State.
Really?
Yeah, so before we go any further, we got to accept two important parts of Mandarich's personality. One, stud lineman in college. Ton of awards and acclaim. And the other part is that he's a dickhead. He showed up to meetings drunk or skipped them because he was hungover. There was like a character concern that he liked Guns N' Roses, which I do think is a character concern, but not in the way they meant it.
But not in the way this guy sounds. Sounds like he would be all about Guns N' Roses.
That's what I'm saying. Also, he was on a ton of steroids, by the way.
Also, great. Great this for Guns N' Roses.
This not Axl Rose. Axl Rose was on cocaine.
Oh, that's right.
So Tony Mandarich, at the time of his combine, listen to this, 330 pounds, 11% body fat.
Holy what? Shit.
Yeah. He got fake piss so he could pass his drug test at the Rose Bowl.
Hell yeah.
He doesn't go to the, he doesn't participate in the actual combine itself because he would have had to take a drug test there. So he just does a private workout for all of the coaches like at Michigan State. So, all right, 330, 11% body fat. He puts up 39 reps on the bench press at 225. That's more than Aaron Donald, by the way. He has a 10-inch vertical. He has a 10.3 standing long jump, and he hits a 4.65 40-yard dash at 330 pounds.
This is a comic book hero, bro. He's not real.
Yeah. Did they have, like, what was that thing called? You know, the fast walk things at the airport? What the hell are those called?
Yeah, the sliding walkways.
Yeah, yeah.
So, apparently, rumor is that he hit 21.3 miles per hour on his 40.
No fucking way.
That's the rumor.
Maybe kilometers per hour.
Yeah, they were doing the Canadian system.
That's right.
So after the workout and before the draft, he actually gets the cover of Sports Illustrated. And his nickname on there is The Incredible Bulk, which is corny. But
he's just doomed to begin here, dude.
He's considered the best NFL draft prospect of all time because, like, no fucking shit. But he was also, something most people didn't know is that he was one of the first big-time prospects to train specifically to do well at the skills being tested during the combine. And it shows, but, you know, steroids helped, too.
Yeah.
He goes from a mid-first-round pick to all of a sudden, like, this generational can't-miss prospect. So with that in mind, here are the first five picks of the 1989 NFL draft. Pick one, Troy Aikman, Dallas Cowboys, Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Pick two, Tony Mandarich, Green Bay Packers. Pick three, Barry Sanders, Detroit Lions, Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Pick four, Derek Thomas, Kansas City Chiefs, Hall of Fame. And pick five, Deion Sanders, Atlanta Falcons, Hall of Fame.
Jesus Christ.
Whoops. One of those things is not like the others.
Wow.
So he immediately skips rookie minicamp and holds out. He signs his four-year, $4.4 million deal after the end of the preseason and was off the juice by now since the NFL has a much stricter drug testing policy than college.
Yeah, Lyle Alzado helped that out. Yep.
He only played in 9 series in 14 games in his rookie season, playing behind a free agent left tackle that was signed to be a depth piece.
Really?
Yep. The next year, they're like, all right, dude, you're starting at right tackle. And in his season, he had 8 penalties. He allowed 12.5 sacks and 22.5 QB knockdowns. He was moved around to different spots and was showing improvements slowly as a player, coming along slowly. But the entire time he was in Green Bay, he was either injecting or swallowing copious amounts of painkillers and alcohol, like, every day. He gets a concussion in the preseason before his third season starts, and when he tried to return, he was diagnosed with post-concussion symptoms and put on IR. He gets cut, goes to Michigan, falls deeper into drugs and alcohol. Fortunately for him, his family puts him in rehab, and he legitimately, to his credit, kicked his habits. And not only that, but a year after getting sober, he got signed by the Indianapolis Colts, where he'd play for 32 of his potential 41 games as a tackle and guard before a shoulder injury caused him to retire. After retirement, he did a bunch of stuff like be a sports reporter in Canada. He got really into nature photography, had a couple kids. He got sued for posting revenge porn of his ex-wife online. He wrote a book, you know, the usual.
Classic.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Seems like a nice guy. So, anyways, long story short, studies are split on the actual value of the NFL Combine, but Tony Mandarich is probably my favorite Combine story, mainly because it makes fun of the Packers. Fuck the Packers. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
I got a Packer.
Oh, God damn it. Oh, shit.
So I got a shorty this week that involves Packers and weed. So my guy this week is Drew Nowak. So in high school, he played defensive end mostly because he's basically a big guy, right? High school, they were like, hey, you're 6'4", 250. You can play whatever in the line. But he also dabbled in center. So he went to Western Michigan, where he had over 180 tackles and led the Mid-American Conference in tackles for loss. Mid tackles for loss.
That's the Mac. You put the fucking respect on the Mac's name, baby.
So he was the Mac Defensive Player of the Year and first team All Mac during that year.
Yeah.
So even with those numbers, he went undrafted and was signed by the Jags in 2012 as a defensive tackle. So, however, due to the barren depth and poor player management by the Jags, they were short on the offensive line, so they switched him to offensive guard. So he would spend all of the 2012 season on IR and would be cut in 2013. He would sign to the practice squad and would then be elevated to the active roster in December. He would be released in 2014. Nowak would then sign to the practice squad of the Seahawks in 2014 and be named their starting center in 2015, only to be waived in December and signed to the practice squad 4 days later. A year later, he would then be signed to a reserve contract and waived 5 months later. He signed with the Chiefs and was cut 2 months later. So kind of rough extently showing you how shitty the NFL can be, right? Of like, hey, you can be this really good prospect, like you said, but also like it's just a meat grinder and you're going to take whatever you can take. So as of right now, he currently owns 3 shares of the Packers despite playing for 3 other teams. And he now owns Freedom Green Farms in, I'm going to say this wrong because I'm not from the Midwest, but Kaluska, Michigan.
It's probably a good approximation.
So yeah. He grows medical and recreational cannabis. So shout out weed and the enemy of the pod.
Hell yeah. Yeah. You know what? If you're a Packer and you smoke weed, it's fine.
He technically wasn't ever a Packer.
Does he have his own strain, Shane?
I don't know. Let me look.
I'd buy that shit.
Practice squat kush.
It's like 2% THC. Yeah.
He's got a big American flag on the front page, so I don't think we want to buy from him.
Probably not.
Of course not. All right. So we did weed. We did steroids. We kicked the ball into the end zone. That was pretty sick, except for fuck the Raiders. So let's do some dynasty buys, sells, holds. I'm abstaining this week. I have way more prospect shit to talk, so I'm going to ruin your ears and enjoyment of this show later instead of earlier. So Ryan, let's price check.
What do you guys think about selling, or what could we get for Deebo Samuel?
The same price that my guy is, because they're right next to each other on startup value.
Oh, great.
He's tricky, right? Like, he's one of those guys where, in my opinion, I think he's worth a first, right? Like, 109 post, but I don't think anybody's going to give you that, which kind of fucking sucks because, like, even though Debo's never going to have his 22 season again, I still think he is a game breaker, right? I think he's like super budget Jamar Chase, where like he gives you the option to have 30 points every week and then the option to have 2 points every week. So it's just such a boom bust thing.
So you would think like a straight up just first, a late first pick, or like a second and a third?
Okay, look. So here's my thing about Deebo. I think what Shane said is true. I think he's worth a first. But I don't think anyone's paying a first for Deebo because anyone that watches football knows that Deebo is hit or miss, right?
Right.
So my thoughts, if you're trying to move off of a guy like Deebo, it's probably in your best interest, unfortunately, to be like, yo, I'll give you Deebo and like 202. For like 108.
I think you get more than that, though.
We would have to bundle.
I get it, dude. This is such like a buyer's market right now where like no one's going to be giving their price tickets away, right? Like you definitely have to like be the initiator to kick shit down.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Deebo would be a fucking excellent post-draft sell. I think you would get more for a 2025 first after the draft, when people are now focusing their brains back onto player valuation instead of pick valuation.
Okay, sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Because right now, everybody's like, this draft is going to be weird. I'm just going to say it right now. There's going to be 50 different variants of theoretical ADP. I know we see people move guys within tiers, but like this draft class is so wide open that I do not know how anybody's going to have the same draft board. So I think this year definitely is going to be like, as I know we always say get your guy, but I feel like this year's definitely going to be get your guy, where we're going to see some really weird shit where people are going to be taking our wide receiver 10 at 107, right?
So
it's just gonna be weird.
Are you saying to be on the safe side, I should take Benson at 101 instead of 102?
No, I think you should get Deebo Samuel plus 102 to give Ryan 101.
That's the problem though. Is like even not sharp people players know Deebo's game.
Well, yeah, because everybody saw who. Unless you're brand new to fantasy, like eventually you're a me who comes into the game. But like you look at him, and be like, oh, he was wide receiver two, right?
Yep.
The ceiling is there, but it's touchdowns. San Francisco's so tricky, man. Like, he's a person where he has more value on your team than you can get for him. And for that reason, I think he's just a hold until you can, like, package away.
Yeah, right. I don't think a one-for-one for Deebo is ever going to work out in the person getting rid of Debo's favor.
Yeah, for sure.
I think if you offered somebody Deebo Samuel in, like, 204 for Rome, I think most people would do that.
I think so too, but not right now. I don't think now.
Yeah, like you said, let's wait for this for post draft.
I think Debo's a sell. I agree. I think Debo's a sell.
We said it last year, right? He was the most expensive guy on that roster for the potential lowest floor. And you know what's going to happen? I'm going to be on the other side of the pendulum this year. And this year, I'm going to be like, draft Deebo Samuel because he's going to be the cheapest player on that team.
Yep, absolutely. Especially like, I'll be all over Deebo in like underdog best ball tournaments this summer.
Yeah, because Ayuk's already a fourth round startup pick. Last year he was sixth. This year Debo's a sixth. Ayuk's a fourth. Like it shit just going to keep flip flopping, right?
Yep.
Right.
Anything else on Deebo, or do you want us to shift over?
No, it's Shanga.
Let's see.
My guy was right next to yours. I'm back again with another sale. I'm not sure if we've talked about him on the podcast. I know we had a pretty decent discussion about him on the Discord. Because again, this player is really hard to predict week to week. And as much as I love this prospect, last year, we all loved him. He did great this year or the last year, whatever the time, the way you scale fantasy. But if I'm in a start sit league, I'm going to pivot off of Jaden Reed.
I agree. I totally agree.
Really?
Right now, Jaden Reed is wide receiver 25 in value, around a sixth round startup in the same tier as Saquon Bryce and right between the 108 and the 109. Again, I think he's like Deebo. You're not going to get that kind of return. No one's going to give you straight up Brian Thomas Jr. or Adonai Mitchell for him right away. You probably have to package him up. But right now, tiers are really weird of basically who falls in these spots. And the unpredictability for me with Green Bay is the reason why I want to bounce off of Jaden Reed. Because within a confident week-to-week start, like best ball, I'll keep him. You know what I mean? Definitely that he's a better asset there where like he gives you the ceiling of 25 points. Okay. But he's like Deebo, right? Where he had absolutely game-breaking weeks sequentially and then big old fat zeros when it mattered most. So there's so much talent on that team, right? Like they drafted what, 5 pass catchers last year, plus they have Christian Watson.
Right.
So while I don't doubt him as a talent, I do kind of am skeptical of his ability to become a target hog. Like we actually envision him to be, like, he's not a 120 target hog player in that system. Right. As a player, he could do it, but like within that ecosystem, it's going to be really hard for him to get that kind of really dense target share.
Because his skills will be clouded by the fact that there's just too many decent talent. Yeah,
they're just passing the ball around too much. So last year he had 64 receptions, 94 targets, which is a lot, right? Almost 800 yards, 12.4 yards per reception, which is all really good statistics. However, his target share was 17%, 60th in routes run, and only a 10.3 ADOT. And he had an extreme variance of 10 touchdowns last year.
Jahan Dotson.
And that shit's going to regress. So I think now is a good time to pivot off because every other statistic that he was in, he was around the late, like the early 30s to late 20s, which is like very replaceable for the price point. That's kind of why I value the asset accumulation more than the actual point output in this, in this circumstance.
Right.
Well, that's a good point. That's one of the like least experienced players that we've talked about selling so far. Like this guy's what, only got a year, 1 year. So
yeah. And it sucks, right? Like I saw a tweet this week. It said like fantasy players don't understand. You shouldn't trade players that score you points, right? And that's a completely correct statement to make, but to me, smarter people have told me this, and I try to listen to people who are smarter than me. But if you can get replacement value and get accumulated capital, that's how you win in Dynasty, right? Like, right. Sure, you can score points, but at the end of the day, if you can score within the same approximation of points and have an additional pick to thicken up your roster, trade up to a higher tier player, that's how you dominate, right?
Right.
So his expected fantasy points per game was supposed to be 13.1, ranked 43rd at the position, but he did finish with 13.6 points per game, 26 overall, which basically means to me, based upon his statistical evaluation as well as target share, his regression is going to come. So I'd rather get out ahead and instead of maintaining the 205 value that we're going to see at the end of the season potentially next year and just like get out if I can.
Yeah. And I think the thing that you guys, your players that you've brought in today have in common, at least for me, is I fucking love both of those players. I think they're both great. Debo and Jaden Reed, if you had a team with both of those guys on there, you're going to fucking cook. But
yeah.
That's the difference between fantasy and reality, right? Like, This podcast was super fucking high on Jaden Reed. Absolutely. And we've been on the Jaden Reed train for a fucking year now.
Yeah.
So I just recognize, like Shane said, it's he's going to lose fucking, you're going to go crazy when he loses targets to Bo Melton.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, right.
And you know what? He should, because all of those dudes are playing well.
Yeah, it's actual NFL versus Dynasty, right? And like I think Correct. That's where you kind of have to chase the dragon in this circumstance. Like even though I do have the full theory that a lot of fantasy managers are going to fucking cook themselves this year trying to chase Puka, trading like assets way cheaper than they should, trying to get the lottery dart. Yep. But like, I don't know, say like Adonai Mitchell lands in Carolina in the beginning of the second, right? Like, he's clearly the number one target in that offense. And I think as much as that team is scary, I'd rather take the dude who I know has the ability who can be the alpha compared to be like, oh, this is just another circumstance where I'm going to have to guess week to week of, is this guy going to be the target leader?
Correct. I think that's absolutely true.
You think that's, I mean, we can get to it later when we talk about it, but you think that's the most likely scenario for Mitchell?
I don't think he makes it out of the first.
fuck this dynasty shit. Let's talk rookies. I'm in the
it mood. Overlaps dynasty overlaps, right? Because whoever lands in KC is going to be fucking wide receiver 4 on everybody's board.
Yeah. And and get out touched by fucking Noah Gray most weeks.
Hey, Johnny Mutt signed a contract.
Yeah.
Oh god. I had him for a touchdown in some like DFS last year, but you want to just go right into it, Tony, and talk about Mitchell?
Yeah, let's start. We could start with AD Mitchell. Let's fucking kick it. Ryan said he had a lot of things he wanted to share about AD Mitchell, and usually Ryan is one to, you know, let us cook and then come in and hit us with the icing on the cake. So I want to hear it. I'm ready for this.
No, I just had a good comparison. I didn't have a lot to say about him per se in terms of analysis. I've got more about the tight end this week, but this guy's big. This guy's big. He's tall, but he's not built. Yeah. So that could potentially be a lot of problems for injuries in his future career in the NFL. He's got really good hands though, and it shows there's a few plays where he's going to need to work on where he's getting like, where he's like getting hit before the ball comes to him and he's missing the ball and like where it should be an NFL catch. He's going to have to work on that. Maybe it's just being timid or being afraid, but he's going to have to work on that if he wants to be an NFL wide receiver. My comparison to this guy is actually Brandon Marshall.
Oh.
Yeah. This guy's going to be really good. He's going to be a good talent for the NFL. There's like, I don't want to say very little that he needs to work on, but he's like NFL ready in terms of most things. But like I said, he's going to have to work on his hands and getting 2 feet down to complete those outside passes and post routes in the end zone. Because a lot of the ones I was seeing, he just had 1 foot in the end zone or 1 foot in college. That's all you need. But NFL's different. So what do you got, Tony?
I actually want to disagree with you on that last part. I thought his ability on the sidelines was out fucking standing. That was some of my favorite stuff that I saw from him, like his spatial awareness of where the sidelines was. I think that like his hands are better than we think they are, but they're thrown off by how absolutely bad Quinn Ewers is as a quarterback.
I think that's why I liked Adonai Mitchell a lot, is because the dude's got a big catch radius. It's not like you can't throw it 4 yards in front of him, but like he definitely can get the ball, and Quinn Ewers definitely put it around him, not to him.
Right. I have just a couple lists of struggles. Ryan, you kind of already brought this up. He struggles to win at the catch point when he's got a more physical DB going for the ball. He's not going to win 50-50 balls for you.
Right.
I didn't see much in terms of yards after the catch ability. I didn't see him do... He doesn't win with anything other than speed.
Got a couple spins.
He does, but like it kind of reminds me of the way you see like a Chris Olave after the catch.
Yeah.
So he's not like a, and we'll get to him in a minute, he's not like a Malik Nabers. I said though, his hands are excellent, like given what he was working with. And one of the things that when Ryan says Brandon Marshall that stuck with me is like, I also saw Mitchell doing a lot of like two-handed snares of like fucking rockets. Yeah. Because they were terribly thrown. I also said that his route running was much better than what you'd expect from someone with his size and speed, and his double moves are insane. He also ran a 4.35 40, so
that's pretty good.
9.97 Ross.
Yeah, his athletics testing was fucking great. And also, I had him listed as way lighter. I had him listed at 196, and at the combine, he came in at 6'2", 205, which is pretty good. That's about Justin Jefferson's size. He's just lankier.
And he put up a 4.35.
I had him. I wrote down 6'4".
That was inflate.
Yeah, that was from Texas's media guide.
Okay.
But something that I noticed too in his athletic testing is that like his splits show a guy that like has a very clear second gear acceleration. Like his 10-yard split was slower than his 20-yard split. So he's a long speed guy.
Depending on where this guy goes, he's going to be, hopefully he's thrust into that position to be an instant starter, like Shane mentioned, going to Carolina, just being the only person, because this guy's career is going to be potentially really good unless he runs into some injuries. But I really like this guy.
I remember watching Troy Franklin, and I'm watching A.D. Mitchell, and I'm like, oh, wait, this is just better.
Yeah, that was my same thought. I was like, oh, Troy Franklin, wide receiver 4. Oh, never mind.
Nope. Yeah, this is my wide receiver 4 right now. I've still got quite a few guys to watch, but when Shane says I don't think he makes it out of the first, I would definitely support that. Shane, I don't know if you did a player comp for him that you can recall, but the thing that popped to mind with me when I was watching A.D. Mitchell was Christian Watson.
I can see that too. I also, the lazy take on Twitter I saw was CeeDee Lamb. I have a controversial one because I was looking at his like arm length and his splits and stuff. He's got like the same Ross as Tyreek.
Wait, Tyreek Hill?
Yeah, Tyreek.
I didn't see the movement.
Like, oh no, he's not electric like him, but there was just like, I was looking at his Ross and everything, and then like there are like, it was just a weird thing I got fixated on.
Okay. I said that like, if first off, we can all acknowledge his ceiling is tremendous.
Yeah.
But you know, if his landing spot sucks, and if he gets to be one of those guys that has like nagging leg issues or knee issues that affect your, yeah, like your speed, like Christian Watson had happened to him, then he could flame out. But, like, everything's there for him to be successful. He just needs to stay healthy and land somewhere good. So I liked him a lot.
And hopefully, whichever team he lands on, they emphasize him putting on more weight, because that's only going to help him with those. Because, like I said, he is lanky. He's less than 200 pounds and 6'4". I mean, there's going to be injury risk there.
I mean, I think as long as he's not being thrown hospital balls over the middle, like he's very good over the middle from what I saw, but as long as he's not like having Nick Mullins just try to kill him every play, I think he can be successful, right?
I'm with
you. But if he ends up in like Carolina, like you say, like he's going to be getting a lot of those hospital balls.
I think he might have been in like Buffalo, dude, honestly.
I'm into it.
That might be interesting.
I wrote that today. If you told me today in March that he goes to Buffalo and starts all season, he shouldn't go any later than 108 in Dynasty rookie drafts.
I would take him at 107. I have not watched Brian Thomas Jr. yet, but he is my wide receiver 4 right now. Like a much, much higher. I did write BYU in 2023. He's cooking the shit out of these white boys with double moves.
Yeah. Oh, the double moves are real nice. All right. So let's stay receivers. Let's go Malik Nabers. Cause now like all the nice things we just said are like irrelevant.
Can I ruin your segment happiness right now? Cause I was talking to my dad. I'm going to rip off some hot takes from my dad. So given context though, he did want Chosen Anderson on the Chargers at some point. I don't remember when Chosen Anderson got traded. So we do have to go with a litmus test of maybe not the biggest fantasy eye on this prospect. But my dad did say he thinks Rome is the best wide receiver in this class.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because after we're done talking Nabers, Shane, I think you and I have the same opinion about the top three, but Ryan is pure as the driven snow and unfucked by fantasy football Twitter. So after we're done doing Malik Nabers, I want to ask those top three wide receivers. I want to know who they are for Ryan so far between Nabers, Adunze, and Marvin Harrison.
Like all of them.
Yeah, they're really good. You can't really go wrong, in my opinion. Anyways, my dad thinks J.J. McCarthy sucks and Drake May is overrated. So
I'm with that. Your dad knows ball.
Yeah, I can see that. Dad takes. Hell yeah. This guy's going to be good. I don't have too much to say about Malik Nabers, except he put up some incredible numbers his last year in school, 14 touchdowns, almost 1,600 yards. My player comparison to this guy, Amon-Ra.
Okay.
I had not thick Debo.
Okay. I had early career Odell Beckham.
Okay.
Was OBJ like a really good route runner in college though?
He's not the crispest route runner, but a guy that just had so much speed and technique that like in terms like of hand fighting.
That's a good comparison because he's around the same build as Odell. Odell's like almost 6 feet. This guy's 6 feet. About the same body build. I like Amon-Ra as a better comparison because he's got the ability to just ball out. Like, this guy's going to be great wherever he goes.
Yep.
He's got, like, 3 gears of speed. I know Tony and I talked about this off air, but Steve Smith did not like the way he deals with press coverage because the way LSU teaches their players is not to hand fight or push through contact. It's to do head fakes and shit, which obviously is a skill that can be trained in the NFL to do something different. But, like, he is beating these guys supremely off the line with just speed alone, like no technique, right? He's just like, I'm gone. Goodbye. Which I think is a really good asset to have with someone who also has the ability to catch any ball thrown around them. Insane contact balance, insane catch radius. Like,
yep. He looks like Ja'Marr Chase when he has the football in his hands.
That's the comp I've been seeing too.
And after the catch, I think he's Ja'Marr Chase.
He's better after the catch, in my opinion, as a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Not as better than Ja'Marr Chase, but just as a prospect. He's better after the catch than he is before the catch.
And look, Steve Smith knows ball, especially because he made fun of Jerry Jeudy. But like, but like him saying like, you know, look, LSU doesn't teach their guys how to beat the jam and the way you're going to need to in the NFL. And then the response to that is like, damn, I guess I should probably get rid of all my Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase shares because they went to LSU too, so maybe they can't beat the jam. Like, and that's what I wrote. I wrote his lack of polish in certain aspects of the game are offset by the fact that he's faster than fuck.
It's true, dude. Speed kills.
That's true.
My hope, my dream for him is that he goes to a team that uses a lot of pre-snap motion and moves him all over the place to like
not the Giants.
But you know what? Like there's if it's the Chargers, I would imagine that he feasts. If it's I honestly think that he could be successful in New York.
Is there a world where the NFL surprises us and he is wide receiver one off the board?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, but like I feel like Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber, where he's like, but you're saying there's a chance. Like,
you never know, right?
Yeah, because someone could. All it takes is one team to be like, this is our guy. And I think the credence to him not going to New York is that Malik Nabers is, at his core, a speed guy. And the Giants have already invested premier draft capital on a speed receiver that they don't fucking use in Jalen Hyatt. So, like, someone said, like, oh, the Bears, if Nabers falls to 9, the Bears shouldn't pick Nabers because he plays too much like DJ Moore. And that's objectively fucking wrong.
But also, you know what's really cooler, much more cooler than a 1,000-yard receiver? Two 1,000-yard receivers. Not that complex. It's not that fucking hard.
So
I don't think he makes it past 9, dude. I think if Chicago has a chance at him, or if Atlanta has a chance at him, I think Atlanta's going to either take him or trade out, and someone's going to jump up to take him.
Yeah, I don't think he's there at 9. All the stuff that has him at 9, I think, is prospect fatigue.
Yeah.
Ryan Edgeko, my guy. Love you to death. Like I said, untouched by the awful bullshit that is fantasy football Twitter. I want you to rank these guys 1, 2, and 3. Give me who's best out of Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze. Give them to me in order.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to go Harrison, Odunze, Nabers.
Okay.
I'm gonna surprise you, Tony.
I thought about going Nabers second, but I think I'm going with that.
This is my take, right? This there's a lot of caveats to this, but I'm going to surprise you, Tony, because I also have Rome potentially as a year one within talking 2025. I think Rome has an ability to finish higher than Malik Nabers. Obviously, Nabers is the ceiling pick, right? But I think for the discount that you are going to get at potentially getting Rome at 107 compared to potentially Malik Nabers at 103, I think I would go potentially Rome as of right now. But obviously, situation changes, ceiling play, yada, yada, yada.
It's March.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, Marv, I'm not going to fucking doubt. Like I said last week, I'm going to say it again. If he goes to Arizona, I'm taking him 101. I don't give a shit.
I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret. My board right now, my big board, is 101 Caleb Williams. Well, I'm not there yet, Shane. 102, 102 Marvin Drake Harrison. 102 Marvin Harrison. 103 Malik Nabers, 104 Jaden Daniels.
I could get behind that, dude. I really could. That doesn't surprise me at all.
Give me the home run. I want home runs. I don't want shit.
105 Ben Sinnott.
That's because the trade out is such good content. You can't pass it. Honestly, dude, I was thinking about it last night. I was like, there's a world where I could potentially take Marv, Caleb, Nabers, May, JD, May, right? Flip those two, however you want to choose them, depending on landing situation. But I feel like I could rip two wide receivers in the top three. I wouldn't have a problem with it, right? But also, like, my teams are also built with quarterbacks already. So I'm not like, oh, you got to take the best player available. But, like, also there's that weird, like, how much market share can you hold? Can you hold 5 top 10 quarterbacks in the league without fucking yourself, right?
Right, right. All right, so wide receiver talk achieved. And we really front loaded it because Bucky Irving.
You don't like Bucky Irving? Listen, I know his Ross was ass. All right.
Terrible.
Kyron had the same shit, right?
Kyron was a much better pass catcher.
I still thought Bucky was like kind of smooth with it. Like he wasn't great.
He is.
But
he is. I broke down Bucky Irving into two plays. All he can do is two plays. One, he runs against an incredibly light box because Oregon runs a spread offense and ends up being a huge play. 2, runs against the 7-man box for 1 yard.
That's fair. He does churn, though, and he is patient. He does get a little cute, too cute sometimes, yeah, trying to bounce to the outside. Like, he will follow his blockers, but he definitely, like, wants the breakaway.
My player comparison was Travis Etienne. I mean, this guy's decent, but he needs to put on, like, 10 more pounds, 20 more pounds.
I can see that. Improper usage of him. I get that.
But like Tony said, he played in Oregon, which is a lot more pass heavy. So I kind of feel like maybe he wasn't, all of his skills weren't utilized to the best that they could be. He still had 11 touchdowns or 13 touchdowns if you count the receiving touchdowns as well.
Dude, he was good.
He had 413 yards receiving and, you know, almost 1,200 yards on the ground.
He was good. There's no denying it. Like, okay, so the thing that I felt after I watched all of it, I watched like 8 games of Bucky Irving, and I sat down and I'm like, this is before the combine too. So I was like, all right, look, he's going to be good. I don't think he's going to be a bell cow, but I think that he can be a valuable asset in an offense that gets their backs out to the edge. But I also think he runs like a much bigger back. Like, yeah, he'll stiff arm dudes.
Yeah.
Like, and he has in the NFL, I don't know how well it's going to work. But I will say this. Last year, kind of like how Shane was talking about Tank Dell earlier. Last year, I wrote off Devon Achane because I was like, yo, this dude's way too small to be a featured back. And he needs to go to like this perfect system to be incredible. But even though the testing is totally different, like, I got the same feeling after I was done watching Bucky Irving that I got with Achane last year. And so I will definitely have some Bucky Irving at some point because I don't want to miss twice.
And I think the thing with that, too, is like, I think his Ross is going to scare a lot of people off. And I think the fact that this running back class has been labeled as ass will let you get a discount, right? Because I have a feeling people are going to be hit with this like swath of running backs in the second round, and people are gonna be like, I don't want this shit. Can I trade for literally anything? I'll give you my 205 for Derrick Henry. Is that cool? You make the decision, right? And like, and I think that kind of forcing of down players will let me pick up somebody. Like, he could be a fucking FA, you know what I mean? He could be given like the Zach Evans treatment, someone we loved and just hits the seventh round and nobody wants him, right? So like, I don't know, man. He's a guy where like, yeah, on his phone too much. I think he's a guy where like I will definitely have at least one share of him in one of my leagues because I'm gonna have a bunch of thirds and I'd be like, dude, fuck it, right? Put him on the taxi, see what happens.
I think that he is the lightning in a thunder and lightning backfield combination. So he might get a good amount of touches, you know, pass catches, trick plays, jet sweeps.
The market's open this year too, man. Like, it really is. Like,
he's nice.
We talked about it last week. What's a manager going to do? Do you want to give Josh Jacobs $8 million or do you want to take this dude in the sixth round and be like, what do you got, kid?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I will.
Be better than Zamir White.
I'll have some Bucky Irving, and my player comp was Tariq Cohen.
That's not a bad one.
Yeah. So let's move on to a much less exciting prospect, Will Shipley. That guy fucking sucked.
Okay, I'll give you his career summation in the NFL. Go watch the Kentucky 2023. It feels like his NFL experience. He's a punt returner and rotational piece with a bad yards per carry.
I don't know if it was like, I think it had a lot to do with like the Clemson O-line with this guy that just made him look decent on tape. Because he did have a lot of freaking runs through the middle, and which made me want to compare him to like David Montgomery. Because he didn't get a lot of like outside looks. A lot of his stuff was up the middle, and yeah, he's decent. He's gonna provide value to whatever team decides to draft him. He's not gonna be a bell cow, but he's got a chance to be someone. He's got a good stature. He's almost 6 foot, 210 pounds.
I put him as Sean Tucker.
Ouch.
Yeah, sorry. As soon as I wrote that, then I was like, Tony's going to be upset about this because it's going to hurt him. But like, I thought his tape was decent, but then I saw like holes where I'm like, this shit just ain't going to work in the NFL. Like, sorry. You know what I mean?
I watched, like, the Clemson O-line, and they were just opening these holes for this guy. And I don't know if that's going to necessarily happen to whatever team he goes to in the NFL.
It's not. It's most certainly not. Yeah. But, like, I think that he's another guy that someone could – he might actually have, like, a decent NFL career. But I think most of what he's going to bring to an NFL team is more of a, like, special teams guy. Maybe, like you said, kick punt return. Maybe he's, like, the up man on the punt protect team.
Was he the punt and kick returner for Clemson?
He was the kick returner.
He had a touchdown, or at least two touchdowns in one game.
Yeah. So. And like, unfortunately, you know, kick returns don't really happen anymore. So,
yeah, thanks, NFL. Going woke.
I don't think a team's going to... I think Will Shipley's got, like, fifth round running back written all over him.
He's a day three guy.
Yeah, I comped him to a notable special teams journeyman, Benny Cunningham.
Is that a guy from Happy Days?
That is, in parentheses, derogatory. Benny Cunningham. I don't know. I don't really have, like, a ton of...
I don't get a feeling on him.
Yeah, he's fine. And so, Ryan, lead us off. We're talking Jatavion Sanders. He's a big boy.
I really hope... Okay, this guy, 6'4", 243. He only caught two touchdowns last year, but, you know, he was on the same squad as Adonai Mitchell, who got most of those touchdowns. He's got potential for red zone targets, but I feel like this guy's going to get drafted to a team and fall into, like Michael Mayer syndrome of last year, where... It's he's just not jiving or something's going on with the team. I don't think he's going to land on a team where he's going to be productive right away. The guy's got great skills. All right. I wrote down poor man's George Kittle.
Whoa.
Broke.
He's getting a lot of the middle of, like, the field catches, and it looks great because this guy's big too. So when he's getting those middle of the field catches, he's getting a lot of the yards after the catch, and, like, players are trying to tackle him, and, you know, the first guy generally misses.
I don't think that's because of him.
No.
go on.
He's really good on the RPO, which is something you really look for with these tight ends when they're transitioning to the NFL. If they can do good on the run pass option, and he does pretty well with that, at least from the tape that I saw, I think this guy could translate very well, but he's not going to have good first year production. No. And take 2 or 3 years, I think.
No. Shane?
Yeah, for a dude who's big, and for a guy who's 5'10", 145, he's got to hit the gym a little bit more, because for a guy that size, the amount of times I saw him getting fucking ping-ponged by guys half his size across the field, I'm just like, this DB is 5'10", 180. You should be steamrolling this man like a small child, but he'd just bounce back, fall, lose 3 yards, go back to where he was and get tackled. So, like, I don't know, man. Like Ryan said, I think he's a project. The more I look into this tight end class, four guys we've watched, I think this class, it's Brock Bowers or nobody. I mean, I'll take Ben Sinat.
Thank you.
I'll take him later, right? But, like, for everybody saying Jatavion Sanders is, like, their tight end two de facto, I don't want any part of that.
Let them think that, Shane.
I think he's fine, right? But again, he's just one of those dudes where I'm like, you're not playing up to your size and your frame.
Not to mention, he's got below average blocking skills, which could eat into his playing time.
He looked lost when he was trying to block. It was pretty bad, where I was like, hey, dude, he's just one of those guys where I think he's just too big for his body, right? Or his body's too big for his brain, where he's like a baby giraffe trying to figure it out, right? Yeah. He's just like, he might have hit a growth spurt really late in his life and he just hasn't figured it out. He's good over the middle, like Ryan said. I think he's got good yard after the catch. He's just got to work on, like, running over one more motherfucker, right? Then he's getting 20 more yards and he's a game breaker. I comped him to Darnold Parham.
That's...
Okay.
Woof.
It's not that great, but...
I really, like, before I started watching, he was, like, the assumed tight end two, and his combine testing numbers were were like, he had a decent score, but like fantasy correlation at tight end. I was listening to Zach Ereson this week. Fantasy correlation at tight end is like so closely tied to athletic test scores. And like, if it's under a 9, that's like a huge red flag for most tight ends. In terms of fantasy production, you can still be a fine tight end regardless.
Because you have to have such a great understanding of the game to be a tight end, because
you're playing two positions.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I think he's a solid, like, he gets a good release off the line, no matter where he lines up, in line, in motion, in the slot, out wide. I think he's good all over the field. I don't think he's a dominator, just in general. His route running is fine, but like, a guy that can't really get separation at the college level against linebackers doesn't inspire a ton of confidence in me that he can do it at the next level.
He has a lot to work on, and he's going to need to take that next step in order to improve that. And I don't know if I believe that he will be able to do that.
Right. I said his lack of top end athletic traits didn't harm him against the BYUs of the world in the same way that it will against NFL linebackers. I comped him to Jonnu Smith.
Damn, Miami's going to have two of them.
Damn.
Red zone specialist, maybe. I have him pretty consistently far back behind Ben Sinnott as my tight end two at the moment.
Okay.
I mean, we still have plenty of tight end tape to watch, but like as of right now, it's Bowers presumptively and then Ben Sinnott. But I want to watch some Theo Johnson. I want to watch Jaheim Bell.
He got a 10, right?
It ended up being like a 999 or something like that, or 998.
We rounded up.
Yeah. So that sounds like five guys, and it sounds like we've done some dynasty scouting. We've done some price checks, and actually we did some bids too. So if you're still with us, thanks for sticking around, and we'll reward you by taking a trip. So Ryan, where are we going this week, my friend?
All right, guys, we're gonna come back to the Midwest.
Finally,
we are gonna go back to a state which I've already profiled the city before. We're gonna go back to Minnesota, and this week we're gonna profile Minneapolis. All right, I've already done Duluth.
I want to say real quick before you say, like, because you were like, we're going back to the Midwest. I think Poland is the Midwest of Europe.
That's pretty accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
All right. Minneapolis, home to a bunch of people, bunch of interesting facts. Did you know that the Minneapolis Skyway is 69 blocks long and is the largest walking skyway in the world? It lets people experience the city if they don't have a car, essentially. Thanks to city design and city planning, you are never more than 6 blocks from a park, no matter where you are in within the city district of Minneapolis.
Yeah.
You can thank the University of Minnesota for its apple breeding program and the fact that that is where the Honeycrisp apple was developed.
Goated apple.
And, yeah, true. That's right. Honeycrisp, true. I don't know about you guys, but I feel like the Honeycrisp apple is one of the best apples out there. There's a reason it's $3.99 a pound, at least out here. It's probably like $12.99 a pound in California.
No, nah, it's still $3.99. It's still $3.99.
But it's one of the best apples you can get, at least right now. They have one of the most Midwestern dishes. And even like my mom like makes it out here in Chicago. But they have hot dish, which is basically tater tot casserole. You take ground beef, a bunch of like canned vegetables and some tater tots and some like cream and mushroom soup, and you make what's called hot dish. And it's really whatever I guess you have in available in your pantry. You can really do anything. That's the beauty of a casserole.
Is a Juicy Lucy, is that a Minnesota thing or is that just a Midwest thing?
It's specifically a Minnesota thing. It's a burger with cheese melted inside the patty itself.
Yeah, I got homies in Minnesota. I'm going out there this summer to go to the Minnesota State Fair. And they were like, hey, you're here for a night. Do you want to go? Because when I went to Green Bay, I was staying in Minnesota and we traveled out the next day. They're like, what do you want for dinner? Do you want like the Minnesota classic or do you want like vegan Korean? I was like, what is the Minnesota staple. They're like, it's a Juicy Lucy. And I was like, I got a 4-hour car ride. Am I going to shit myself? They're like, probably. So I went with the vegan Korean.
Fair enough. Well, I will say that I got to tell you this. I've played Minneapolis. Minneapolis is my favorite city to play in the punk scene. The DIY scene is incredible in Twin Cities. Minneapolis especially has always been, it was like the first out-of-state show I played, and I've always had a soft spot. I think, like I said, I've played there 7 or 8 times. We went one time there on tour to the place that had like the original Juicy Lucy, and we were on tour with a band that were, you know, homies, and a couple of them were cooks. And so we went in there, and they were like, hey, we're going somewhere else. And I'm like, fuck you, the fuck we are. And he was like, no, dude, like, it smells like dead rats in here. Like, we're going. So if you're going to get a Juicy Lucy, don't go to the place that is like the original Juicy Lucy. Find it at a fucking place that cleans their restaurant. Yeah.
It's passed by the local...
The health inspector. Yeah.
You know what's funny? I was talking about that with my roommates because we went to a restaurant and I was like, do we ever see health inspection placards anymore? Or is it just like, are we just blind to that kind of shit now where it's like, it's blue, you see it every day?
They have to display those, I thought.
They do, but I'm just saying, like, when you walk into a restaurant, are you ever looking for that?
No. Also, I posted about this earlier. Ryan, they opened like an adventure park in Algonquin right by Jewel, and it's like one of those like kids bounce pits, all that shit.
I saw that, and then they closed it because like they didn't have a business license or something.
Filled with piss.
It wasn't done being built, so there's like exposed wires and planks all over the place, and kids are like getting hella injured there. And I was dude, Action Park Part 2 in fucking my hometown.
God, I love
it.
Bring
your
America.
Kids, bring your wife. Right? I mean, kids got to get injured sometimes so they know what to stay away from, you know?
That's great logic. Anyway, sorry, this is an interesting Minneapolis digression.
Anyway, you know, getting hurt teaches the lessons, part of life. Did you know that St. Anthony Falls, which is located in the vicinity of Minneapolis on the Mississippi River, is the only natural waterfall on the Mississippi River? I thought that was kind of interesting.
Damn.
And if you look up pictures, it's at most 2 to 3 feet high. It's not like
still counts.
Anything crazy. Because the Mississippi, as we all know, is one of the biggest rivers in America, if not the biggest. And it's so wide, it's hard to get natural falls going through that.
True.
Minneapolis is actually one of the most like immigrant friendly cities in America. They've got a huge Somali population. After their wars in the 1990s, a lot of Somalis moved over here. In fact, like who's the lead guy from that Tom Hanks movie about him being on the ship?
Captain
he's
Phillips.
A Somali yeah Big. Captain Phillips. I'm the captain now. You know, he was a Somali refugee who moved to Minneapolis when he was like 14 in his teen years, something like that.
The first time I went to Minneapolis, we were walking through one of the Somalian neighborhoods because like it's cheap and that's where all the like punks and immigrants hang out. And the guy that was hosting us was like, you know how you can tell this building is a drug front? And I was like, how? And he's like, it's a Mongolian barbecue place in a part of the town where nobody eats pork.
Oh, shit.
Like, oh.
But anyways, I was going to say that this is one of the more immigrant friendly cities because the way that they have their streets, they have all their streets are like president names and they're in order of succession of those presidents to help people study for their immigrant exams to become a citizen.
That's cool.
So you can like walk, you can walk the streets and obviously the first one's Washington and further.
Dude, shout out Jesse, the Mind Ventura.
I thought that was pretty cool. I don't know if Ventura started that, but you can thank Minneapolis for the Mars Corporation and our candy. The Snickers was developed in Minneapolis. Tony will like this. You guys, we all like this. We all like watching cat videos on like YouTube or what, little cute cat videos, right? So in 2012, they started the first internet cat video festival. And you can still go to this day. Maybe we should go there, Tony.
Let's go.
I don't know what to expect for going there, but they have the first internet cat video festival.
You'll probably find a really nice wife out there.
Oh yeah. She'll make you hot dish.
Sure. Let's see. In 1953, the University of Minnesota developed the procedure for open heart surgery, and the first open heart surgery was performed at the University of Minnesota in 1953. Okay. And it was successful. I think the guy, I mean, obviously after open heart surgery, you don't live crazy long, but it just prolongs your life. I think the guy maybe lived 10 more years from that, something like that.
True.
But it's also home to the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome, who we all know was demolished in 2014. But it is the only sports facility to host the Super Bowl, the World Series, the MLB All-Star Game, and the NCAA Division I Final Four. No other stadium has hosted those venues. And that was demolished, you know, almost 10 years ago. So,
wow.
Yeah. They have the Sound 80 recording studio, which is a famous recording studio where, as we all know, Bob Dylan came from Duluth, who I profiled in an earlier episode, and obviously did some recordings in Minneapolis in his earlier career, as well as Cat Stevens. But that Sound 80 recording studio was also responsible for creating the first digital recordings ever.
Nice.
Like for music. Instead, you know, when people were making the transition from going to regular, was it 8mm? That's movies. Track by track tape. When you would have to, if you were a mixer, you'd have to sit there and like cut bits out of tape to edit it and stuff. And Now this was the first digital recording process. The Geek Squad, as we all know, from Best Buy, was founded in Minneapolis. And they're also one of the first cities in the United States to use Wi-Fi instead of, you know, the old dial-up internet stuff. They have the Mall of America. Everyone knows that. It's actually 78 football fields. That's how much area it is. And they have over 520 stores. It would, if you spent like 15, 20 minutes in every store in the Mall of America, you'd be there for almost a week.
Oh yeah.
That's how many,
you could also take the shuttle. I think it's like one stop away from the airport, the tram or the metro.
That's the last time I set foot in a Hot Topic. When we were on tour, we went to the Mall of America and we got 2 XL Sbarro pizzas and we went to fucking Hot Topic. Suck it.
To go along with the sound recording studio that they have, they also have the Orfield Labs, which is an anechoic chamber. It is the quietest room in the entire world. It actually has a negative sound decibel, which is like, I don't know how you do that, but it's possible, I guess.
They said that you like hear your blood flowing?
Yeah, you can like hear, if you go in there, you can like hear, people say that like when they go in there, they can hear their body like working. You can hear your like processes. You can hear, if you just ate, you could probably hear stuff going through your digestive system. You can hear your heartbeat.
See, I thought that was cool. And then I was like, I'm going to have a fucking panic attack. I can't do that.
Oh yeah, I would absolutely have a panic. I could never do that.
Dude, think about how fucking awesome it would be to fart in that place.
You'd probably explode your head, dude.
It would, you'd blow your eardrums. Did you know that the University of Minnesota opened in 1851, 7 years before it even became a state?
Wow.
That was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
The first bridge to cross the Mississippi was located in Minneapolis, and you can still see the pilings to this day.
Cool.
Per capita, there are more golfers in Minneapolis than any other U.S. city, which I thought was cool. The city also manufactured the U.S.'s first armored vehicle. Let's talk about some people. Let's talk about some famous people from the city, all right?
Let's go.
Brad Hand, MLB pitcher, Brock Nelson, NHL player. We got a lot of hockey players from Minnesota. Zach Parise, very good winger, They got to start with the Minnesota Wild. Jalen Suggs, current NBA player for the Orlando Magic.
Yep.
Matt Tennyson, another NHL player. We've got Rose Totino, who you can credit with the invention of the Totino's pizza roll. Now,
hell yeah.
We all know, as I explained earlier in our Duluth episode, that the pizza roll came from Duluth and was popularized by, God damn it, I can't remember his name right now off the top of my head because it was like 20 episodes ago. But we all know the pizza roll was invented there. But Rose Totino took it to the another level and said, we should sell this nationwide. And we now have Totino's pizza rolls to this day.
That rules.
We have Richard Sears, the co-founder of Sears Roebuck and Company, who is now pretty much bankrupt. John Pillsbury, if you've ever bought any type of Pillsbury products, I don't think he invented the Doughboy. That was a marketing thing. But you can thank John Pillsbury for all your store-bought biscuits and croissants. Charles Schulz, the creator of Snoopy and Peanuts.
There you go.
Right. Norman Spencer Matthews. He is the composer of all of the Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies cartoons we grew up watching as a kid from the 30s and 40s. He wrote all that music for that. Those cool cartoons. I thought that was really interesting.
Nice.
Let's see. Nick Swartzen, who was recently too drunk to play on his own show as a comedian. I don't know if you guys remember Tiny Tim. He would play the ukulele and was really big in the 50s and 60s on a lot of the variety shows.
I did not know he was American.
Yes.
Right?
You wouldn't think it. You wouldn't think it. But he is from Minneapolis. Brian Setzer, solo artist and a member of Brian Setzer Orchestra.
He's got big hair.
Yeah.
Tony, do you know who this rapper is? Prof.
Yeah.
Is from Minneapolis.
Minneapolis has a really, really good hip hop community.
I figured, sure. Yeah, we've also got Atmosphere, the hip hop dude from Minneapolis.
Okay. No, that is Atmosphere is the creator of what I consider to be the worst line in the history of hip hop. You ready?
Oh, what is it?
I got some last words. Fuck all y'all. Stop writing raps and go play volleyball.
It's pretty. Yep. That's pretty original.
It's terrible.
Okay, so you guys remember the movie Apollo 13, and Ed Harris played the, you know, like the director of the guy in the ground. He was behind. The guy that wore the vest and was a part of like directing the moon landing. Well, Robert Earl Gilruth is from Minneapolis, and that is who Ed Harris was portraying in that movie. He was the director of the first U.S. moon landing. You know, Apollo 11, obviously. Apollo 13 was a failure, but he was still there for that.
Wow.
Dustin Byfuglien, former Blackhawk, played for the Blackhawks as an NHL player. David Backes, NHL player. Dominique Bird. Remember Dominique Bird, Tony? Tight end for the Rams in the 2000s. Mo Collins, famous actress. She hasn't done too much lately, but she was made famous from Mad TV.
Yep.
Terry Gilliam, who's actually an American who was part of Monty Python, but was born in Minneapolis. James Hong, and a character actor. He was from Minneapolis, but I'm trying to remember what movies he's been in. He always played like the standard, like Asian American character in like films. Who else we got? Bruce Sweden, an audio engineer and producer who's famous working with Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson and doing a lot of the engineering for their music.
Hell yeah.
We've also got Larry Fitzgerald.
He rules.
But I think most importantly, and it's going to sound cliche, but Prince is from Minneapolis.
Paul Westerberg. Oh, Prince. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Paisley Park is in Minneapolis. It's, I think his family turned it into a museum after his death. His famous flight from like New Orleans back to Minneapolis the day before his death, they stopped in Moline to administer Narcan because of he was just so addicted to pills that he couldn't take enough. It was just it's the same thing that happened to Michael Jackson. He just became so numb to painkillers that just too much was ultimately enough to kill you. And you get to the point where too much is that's all you can handle. And
yeah,
he was found in his elevator the next day after being. And what's amazing to me about the whole addiction thing is that you can be revived on Narcan in a city, fly back to your thing and start taking those drugs again and kill yourself.
Yeah.
Cause that's what literally happened. So,
but like Darling Nikki, it's a really good, really fucking good
sad story, but, I think most relevant contributor to Minneapolis, like society personality, Prince.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, Prince.
More, I think more famous for writing songs for others than a lot of the stuff that he did. Cause a lot of his stuff was, it was good, but the stuff that he wrote for other artists, I think will live on further than the stuff that he wrote. Anyways, that is, Minneapolis.
I got a couple things before we leave the Twin Cities.
Oh, all right. You got sister cities?
I got sister cities, but I got, like I said, man, Paul Westerberg and the Replacements are on my like Mount Rushmore of greatest bands of all time. The Replacements were more punk than your band. Whoever it is that's listening to this, unless you're in the Replacements, in which case,
I mean,
what's up?
I don't hate Winnipeg though, like they have that line.
No, you're thinking the Week. You're thinking of the Weaker Thans.
I'm thinking of the Weaker Thans. God damn it! That they were from Winnipeg. Damn it!
Yeah,
I
already
profiled Winnipeg.
You know what? I was going to talk more about Paul Westerberg and the Replacements, but I want to point out that Minneapolis's sister city is Winnipeg.
That is right. Yeah.
Santiago, Chile is a sister city. We've got Ibaraki, Japan.
Okay.
We've actually got Najaf, Iraq, which is crazy.
Iraq?
Yeah. They've got one Eldoret in Kenya and Bosaso in Somalia.
Okay.
So nothing too surprising there, but everyone should listen to Prince. All right. So that's what we got. We'll see you next week. Same time and place. Happy International Ladies Night forever.
Hell yeah.
Shout
out. Hope you all enjoyed this week's episode.
I'm going to go and listen to women. See you guys later.
Shout out, women.